Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air. I'm David and I'm an alcoholic and chair of today's meeting, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Today's guests are from the Bulls and Bears online meeting in Wellington. And could I get everybody to introduce themselves?
Hi, I'm Beryl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Beryl.
Hey, Beryl.
Kia ora, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe. Hi, my name's Peter and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
And we also have Graham here, who's the co-host with me, who's also helping today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham. Hi, Graham.
And we start each AA meeting, as usual, with the Serenity Prayer. So I invite you, everybody, to join in with me.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now I'd like to ask Graham, please, to read How It Works, which is from the Big Book, pages 58 to 60.
How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if He were sought.
Thanks, Graham. Now, this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous on air radio program, which is on every fourth Saturday at 10:15 a.m. And you can find that on 106.1 FM. And yes, and you're listening to it right now on 106.1 FM. You can contact Alcoholics Anonymous to find out details of meetings or to get any information you want or to get help about AA by ringing our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week telephone number, which is 0800 229 6757, or go to the very informative website, which is aa.org.nz. Now, the AA On Air radio program also has a Facebook page where you can get more details of what's coming up and so on, and leave a message there and we'll say hi to you from it. And this week we've got a message here to say hi to a listener in Scotland. So hi to Pete Hunter of Comrie, which is about 1 hour north of Glasgow. And
Hi, Pete.
And hi to two friends in Berlin. There's Danny and Yasmin. And I know Yasmin runs the Lichtenberg AA meeting in Berlin on Friday night. So
fantastic.
To them too.
Yeah.
It's amazing who listens to this program. And I know there's lots of people in North America who overseas listen to it too. Now, and today we have Peter, Joe and Beryl. Well, I first ask Peter just to read today's daily reflection for March the 7th.
Sure, thanks. March the 7th, the key is willingness. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have the door ever so slightly open, we find that we can always open it some more. The willingness to give up my pride and self-will to a power greater than myself has proved to be the only ingredient absolutely necessary to solve all of my problems today. Even the smallest amount of willingness, if sincere, is sufficient to allow God to enter and take control over any problem, pain, or obsession. My level of comfort is in direct relation to the degree of willingness I possess at any given moment to give up my self-will and allow God's will to be manifest in my life. With the key of willingness, My worries and fears are powerfully transformed into serenity.
Thanks, Peter. And this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and this program runs like an ordinary meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, with people sharing their experiences, strength and hope and stories. And could I ask Beryl, please, to start off today's meeting.
Thank you. I'm Beryl and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Beryl. Hi, Beryl.
Thank you for having me here today. Willingness. That's what... am I not close enough? Right. So my name's Beryl and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Beryl.
And I grew up in an alcoholic home and never wanted to be like my father. But when I started drinking, and the slow progression of drinking more and more, I turned into my father. I was a binge drinker, and sometimes I got really drunk, other times not so drunk. But I always needed a drink to function in social things, and then it was drinking just to be. Coming into AA through a treatment centre called HAMNA was a god job. I only went to treatment to have a holiday, get a suntan and lose weight. But I was educated into what alcoholism is. And it's an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. When I take a drink, the allergy takes over and I want more. And then I don't know what I'm going to do. Get really drunk, be abusive, fall over and pass out. But my recovery actually started when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and listened to other alcoholics. And it was when I became willing to listen. You know, that reading is so true. Once I let go of my self-will and have acceptance, and in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on the old book, on page 449, what is it in this book? What page is it?
417.
If anyone's got the big book to read it. Because acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. It's and if I accept the things as they are and try not to change them to suit myself, but if I do, it's when the trouble starts. I get frustrated, it's not going my way, and resentment kicks in. And I start obsessing on things. So, but if I turn it over, you know, turn it over to my higher power, life seems to go along much easier. And this all comes with practice. And as it tells me in the big book, I'm not a saint. I used to love drama of life. If there was no drama, I'd invent it to make life more exciting. And that with drink. And it wasn't a very good ending sometimes, which caused havoc. Anyway, that seemed to get more dramatic as the years went on. I never knew what I was going to do, and you never knew what I was going to do. Dancing on the tabletops, falling over, blacking out. Blacking out was good because I never knew what I'd done. But waking up or coming to, then the fear set in. What did I do? That's what I love about going into AA meetings. When I enter a meeting, I am in fact facing myself, being surrounded by like-minded people who tell their stories, and I gain knowledge on how other people manage life without picking up a drink. It helps me to understand me. We have a saying in AA, it's how, honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. And by practice, which is that what that reading was about, willingness. And by practicing these three things, it helps me to gain peace of mind, not worry about things that really don't need worrying about. Of course, there's times when I need guidance from outside AA because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not, you know, Lawyers Anonymous or Money Anonymous. But all those things can change, you know, if I stick to the program. And I know the saying a program, it sounds like it's a cult, but it's not. It's just a normal way of living. You know, if I have need outside help, I go to them. You know, doctors, lawyers, whatever. And in AA, I have a sponsor who deserves a medal. She's been my sponsor for many years. And it's suggested that it's women for women and men for men. And I run things past her when I think things are a good idea. And also when I'm unsure of what to do. And that's a godsend, trusting in someone who has my back. Trust is another huge thing that most alcoholics battle with. And over time, as this program is a time machine, it never ends, I'm always moving on. I've grown up in this program, and now I'm growing old in this program. And life changes. You know, for me, it's a program of living, not a program of drinking. I stopped drinking, and then I need to deal with how to live life, and that's what the steps have helped me with. And and sharing stuff in with other people who understand is a great privilege, and for that I'll always be grateful. I'm so grateful for having been given the second chance of life. And this all comes from not picking up a drink. That sounds so simple, doesn't it? If you don't pick up the first drink, you can't get drunk. And if you can't get drunk, then you've got a chance. You know, it's, I have a chance. And I haven't had a drink for quite a while. Not that sometimes I haven't thought about it when the roads got really rough. You know, things have happened, and that's just called life. And that's what the program is. It's dealing life and life's time. And I've made lots of friends. And here I am on the radio. See, my dramatic side's kicking in now. I could go on for an hour, but I won't. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Beryl.
Thanks, Beryl.
And this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and I'm David, an alcoholic and the host for today. And, yes, it's a one-day-at-a-time program where, you know, you just don't have to drink for today. Mm. And I've found it's just been amazing. People will keep coming back, you know, to sometimes more than once a day meetings they go to, otherwise daily, weekly, just regular attendance to get all the support you get at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And these 1 day at a time can, you know, just progress to weeks and months and years. And so just this weekend, for example, Linda from Masterton, Tuesday night. Hi, Linda. It's your fifth year, and this is really, you know, quite extraordinary. You've just done so well. And the same with Monica from Rolmatty, who I know is on her way up, or probably in New Plymouth, for the Central Area Assembly meeting that's there this weekend. Monica's also got to 5 years, and it's extraordinary to watch people come into AA and, you know, with lives, you know, just totally, it can be a total wreck, and just to recover and just to have a normal life again. And yes, and you don't come here for legal advice or doctors or anything like that, but I mean, I've met doctors and lawyers and so on in AA meetings. It can be absolutely anybody. It's just a whole range of people from every possible, you know, walk of life and attending these meetings. Now, just to also mention again the AA telephone number, which is basically somebody there for most of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's 0800-229-6757. Now, can we ask Joe, welcome Joe, to, I think it's your first AA on air meeting. It's not? You've been here before? Oh, well, you know all about this.
Great.
Can we have Joe, please?
Thank you, David. Kia ora, everyone. My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
And it's a pleasure to be here today.
you know, it's a great start to the weekend. I'm not waking up with a hangover, you know, planning how I'm going to get drunk again tonight. I am what is described sometimes in the meetings as a high bottom drunk. When I got here, I still had a lot of stuff on the outside. I had a lot of yets, things I could yet have lost if I had continued drinking. But that was only on the outside, you know. I feel like on the inside, when I got here, I was really at the end of the line. I was at the bottom of the road. I had no hope left at all. I was full of shame and despair and guilt about the way I had been living my life and the way I'd treated other people. And I really, you know, I had been contemplating suicide very seriously immediately before that rock bottom. I'd had previous rock bottoms where I had, you know, been close to suicide as well and then had picked myself up. And, you know, I always seemed to manage to get my life on track again for a little while. You know, things would get bad and I'd get some help and put things back together, but inevitably the same cycle would continue until I eventually got here. I was about, I think I was age 27 when I made it in the rooms. And, you know, I started drinking kind of normal age, I think. You know, I toyed around, you know, from about 11, 12, tasting, but I didn't really get properly drunk until I was about 14. And for my teenage years, you know, it looked in many ways as if I was just drinking the same way as the other teenagers around me. But I was always a bit worse. I was the one who was dancing on the tables at the end of the night, you know, for the longest. I was the one, one of the things I used to do regularly because I love dancing was I would fall over on the dance floor, which I found hilarious, you know, in the height of my, you know, drunken stupor. I just thought it was so funny. The people around me, not so much, right? And so I that was a thing that got me thrown out of bars and pubs and clubs, you know, falling over and tipping other people's drinks over or hurting them or whatever. So, yeah, there was fun and games for a little bit, but generally speaking, the night would end in some sort of drama, often drama for other people and thinking, you know, how are we going to manage her? What are we going to do with her tonight? So, yeah, and I knew I was a problematic drinker from the get-go. I grew up in an alcoholic home also, but my father was in recovery and did his very best to give me the warning signs to teach me. But I didn't want to hear about it. I remember arguing with him black and blue until we were black and blue in the face about why I wouldn't become an alcoholic, because the solution that this program offers is a spiritual solution. And I thought I was going to be a spiritual person anyway, and therefore I wouldn't develop alcoholism because I would already have part of the solution. But yes, that didn't happen. It didn't stop me from drinking. And knowing that I was probably an alcoholic from the get-go didn't stop me from living in extreme denial about that for, you know, for well over a decade of my drinking. So I kind of knew I had a problem. I remember at about age 20 being in... I did geographicals. That was something I did. I kind of moved from one place to another. So I left home at 18 and I kept on moving until I had no choice, until I had to move on because I'd lost a job, or I don't think I ever really lost a job. Well, no, that's not quite true. I did, but I would always make it look okay. But it, inevitably, you know, the longest I was able to stay in any one place until I got to AA was 7 months. 7 months I would last in one job or in one accommodation, and things would happen. You know, people around me would get sick of me and I would have to move on. There were instances literally of kind of leaving in the dead of night or early in the morning, you know, trying to sort of escape the situations I'd got myself into. And then, you know, I came into AA and it didn't... So as I said, I was a high bottom drunk. I heard a lot of people around me whose stories were much worse, and the denial jumped back in really quickly. And people said to me, you know, listen for the similarities, not the differences. Mm-hmm. Listen for the similarities, not the differences. And I just didn't really, because I wasn't quite ready. I was still looking for an easier, softer way. And so at about a year sober, close to a year sober, I hadn't been very sober most of that year, but I'd been going through the motions at least and continuing to turn up to meetings. At a year sober, though, I went out and got drunk again. I didn't get really, really drunk because there was something holding me back. I was still really scared. And after that, I said to my sponsor, I was like, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. And she said to me, very wise woman, if you're not an alcoholic, she said, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, then be my guest. Go back out there, you know, see how it goes for you. Go back into the bars, into the pubs, start hanging out with that old crew again, and you'll find out soon enough whether or not you really are or you aren't. And when she said that, I was so scared. I was so terrified of what would happen, because, of course, I did know what would really happen, that I knew at that moment that, no, I am in the right place, because I knew it was not a normal reaction to be so scared of drinking. And so it was that at that point that I started getting more serious. I do what I call as... I put both feet on the escalator. You know, up until that point, I'd had one foot on the escalator of AA, bringing my life back together, going up, but I still had one foot off the escalator, dragging me behind. And it was a really difficult way to live. But when I realised and the denial ended, I put both feet on the escalator and started not just turning up to meetings regularly, but also getting involved, like allowing myself to form relationships with people in AA. So, because up until that point, I had been, you know, arriving at meetings right before the start, leaving meetings as soon as they were finished. I hadn't been active in a home group. I hadn't been doing any service or contributing to AA in any way. It wasn't cool enough for me, really. But at the point that I got serious about it, you know, I started doing those things. And most importantly, I started actually working the steps with my sponsor. And working the steps is, looking back at our past and starting to make things right and starting to develop not a new personality, but a new behaviour, a new way of life, where we take responsibility and we show up and we become responsible and reliable. And so I started doing all of that stuff, and, you know, gradually, I thought it was going to be awful. I thought AA was going to be terrible when I first arrived here, because I thought it was going to be dull and boring, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I've had far more genuine fun and love and laughter and satisfaction in my years in this fellowship than I ever did beforehand. You know, I thought I was having fun before, but there was always a veneer, I suppose. A veneer underneath which I was very, very insecure, and I did not really like myself. And over the years in this fellowship, I have come to be my own best friend in a way, you know, along with my relationship with a higher power. I'm okay with me, and being okay with me makes it much easier for me to be okay with the world around me. And I'm not going to pretend that life has been plain sailing, and that everything has just flying along smoothly and steadily, because it hasn't, you know, life happens. But I know that in this fellowship, I can find the support, and I can find the answers, and I can find the love that helped get me through everything. And I haven't had a lot of the most awful, catastrophic things happen to me in my life so far. And those, for me, are my yets. So often you'll hear people in the rooms talk about, you know, stick around, the best is yet to come. I know also for me that the worst is yet to come, in that I have not had anyone really close to me die. And obviously I will, you know, that's in my future. But I have seen other people in the fellowship have those terrible things happen to them and be okay with it, you know, and be able to get through it and be able to get through those things while still showing up for their loved ones. So, you know, I'm, as I say, tremendously grateful. I love my life today. It is maybe not doesn't look exciting or glamorous or, you know, like a fantastic life on the outside, but it is a life that brings me love and satisfaction and joy, and I have relationships with my family again today, a way I didn't have before, and, you know, that's all I could want, really. So it's wonderful to be here. I listened to the meeting on it often while I was living overseas. So I always love to give back to the meeting and hope that I might that my message might be able to serve other people out there in the future. All right, thanks very much. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Jo.
Thanks, Jo.
And as Jo had mentioned, this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, which is on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And the programs also go into a podcast afterwards, which you can listen to, which many people listening to would know. It's on the Wellington Access Radio's website, and some of them are even on the AA website, though not all of them, but we're fixing that up. The AA website is aa.org.nz, and it has everything you'd could possibly want to know about Alcoholics Anonymous and where to find a meeting near you, everything, lots and lots of questions and answers that will be helpful to you. You'll also get AA on our telephone number, which is the free phone, 0800 229 6757, if you'd like to speak to somebody from AA about anything that might be on your mind. Right, now we have, we ask Peter, please, to share with us now.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, my name is Peter and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter. I grew up in a family where people were high achievers had brothers and sisters that were, you know, good academic students, tried hard at sport, and I felt different. And whether I did or didn't have any ability, I didn't make any effort to find out, and I felt different, and I had a whole lot of other things that happened to me as a kid, but basically I just felt different, and at 14, can't remember exactly, I went out to a party that was one of our family friends who was turning 21, and I was, as I said, 5 or 6 years younger. And I basically got drunk for the first time, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I felt that all of the problems and all of the disharmony that I'd felt evaporate, and I just felt 6 foot, you know, tall. I was a little bugger then, and I just felt confident, and I felt like that really the answer to what I'd been looking for was presented to me. Kept looking and drinking to find that euphoria that I experienced on that first night, and I never really quite recaptured that euphoria. But what I did do was that I moved my focus from feeling miserable and unhappy about my life and myself to drinking, and over time most of the friends that I had were people that drank in a similar way to the way that I did. The thing that I did notice from a very early stage was that I seemed to have a higher tolerance for alcohol, and I seemed to be, you know, better at drinking than most of the other kids around me. So while I may not have achieved academically or on the sporting field, you know, I was a good drinker. And basically drinking then became the dominant theme in my life. I played golf. One of the reasons I played a lot of golf was that I could go to the 19th and I could drink with the men when I was a boy, and they basically, you know, there was no restrictions, and, you know, we would go to the golf club and, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, and we would go to the 19th afterwards, and back in the day you stayed there for a bloody long time after the round of golf, and that just suited me right down to the ground. I knew there was something that wasn't quite right, didn't quite know what it was, and I didn't really get on well with my parents at home, and I wanted to just basically, you know, leave the town that I lived in, go away, because I was sure that a change of scenery would probably sort out whatever was happening in my life. So I came to Wellington, And no surprise, my problems came with me, and I drank the same way that I had drunk. The only difference was that I drank with a different group of people. I was pretty sure that that I would get found out, and that because I had a native of cunning ability to skate by, to pass exams with the minimum of effort, to do my job with the minimum of effort, all of that sort of, you can fill in the gaps. Because really the main thing that was I focused on in my life was to drink. And so I had about 3 years where I was getting by, but not in any way, shape or form achieving my full potential. And then I got drunk one night and I asked the person that was with me to marry me, and then that ended up happening, and had no real forethought towards it. So I was drunk. We went back and all of a sudden everybody was saying, oh, congratulations, and it was almost, I was so young and immature that I didn't know how to say, no, that's not really quite what I meant, I was just pissed. So I ended up getting married, and that was, sorry, I ended up getting married. Somebody's just giving me a bit of encouragement there to tell another part of the story, which is that I'm still married to the same person. I got married, and the first thing that happened, so we basically, we had a lot of money, we both had good jobs, and we drank every day, and we drank lots every day. And this beautiful wife that I had, had suddenly came from a very, very stable, loving family, and suddenly she's living with this person who, pissed the bed, who peed on the wardrobe, who, fill in all the other gaps. I wasn't the most particularly charming young man on the face of the earth, but the biggest thing was that I would go out and I would, sometimes I would have big gaps on the night. I couldn't remember where I'd been, what I'd done, what I'd said. And so my wife just found that really hard to comprehend. She just didn't understand the idea that people could not remember where they'd been, what they'd done. I can't. I just don't know how that's happened, but I don't remember. I didn't drink after the first year. We settled down and my wife was studying, and that was perfect excuse, because basically while she studied, I drank, and that carried on, and it was quite a good routine. But I knew that there was something wrong. I knew that when I was going into work in the morning, and I could work happily until about 11 o'clock in the morning, because I'd been up until 2 or 3, and then suddenly the blinds would come down and I couldn't think. I couldn't even do the most basic calculations or do the elementary parts of my job, and I thought, it probably isn't that bloody, it's not that good really. I mean, I was 24 or 25. Most of the people I drank with were 10, 15 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And I was basically, I'd stopped drinking with the people that were my own age, because they didn't drink in the way that I drank. What happened then? I then had kids, and that was a great joy. The problem was that I like the idea of having kids, and I like the idea of talking to people about having kids, but the responsibility of having kids didn't really sit well with me, because basically it interfered with my drinking. I had a year where I decided that drinking, if I stopped drinking, then most of the things in my life would come right. And I didn't drink for a year, and it was miserable. And all I was looking for was the chance and excuses to go back out and to drink without any restrictions. And anyway, I decided that what I needed was a new job, that would fix the problem. So I took a job, and it was with a corporate, and it was a very boozy culture. And I found that after a period of time, they had a, an open bar at the end of the night, and this was intended for, you know, people in the office come 5, 5:30 to finish work, sit around, have a chat over a few beers about what had happened during the day. Well, what I did was that I would, everybody else would sit around, well, I would do the same thing. They would all go home at 6 o'clock or whatever time, and I would stay until 11, 12, 1 o'clock because it was free booze. And then I would, you know, somehow or another get home, probably drive, sorry, cops. And basically what happened is that over a relatively short period of time, 18 months, my life moved from where booze was an option. Where booze was an option for me, it suddenly became a compulsion. I came into AA thinking that it was where I could come to fix my drinking, and I think all the things that Beryl shared earlier are so strongly, hallmarks of what I've experienced, is that I came to stop drinking and I found a way of living differently that transformed my negative attitudes into positive attitudes, that I found that there was this thing called a higher power, spiritual way of living, which was so different from the church of my childhood, and it wasn't judgmental. It was basically giving me a freedom and all of the things that we talked about in the reading up front. So I've been sober a long time, most of my adult life, and I have had a life beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, I live a full life. I live with my family. That we live generally in harmony, that I don't run away from my defects. I openly embrace the opportunity to grow, even though I'm an old bugger and even though I've been around a long time, I still and never cease to be amazed at how much more there is for me to learn and how many more opportunities there are for me to embrace. Look, I totally endorse so much of what Beryl and Joe talked about, but today I am a grateful alcoholic. I live a positive life. I try to be as kind, as generous, as honest and as humble as I can be, and I've realised that all those words are words that I can focus on and become better at each day rather than necessarily being absolute words. So I'll leave it at that, and thanks for the opportunity to share.
Thanks, Peter.
And this is coming to the end of the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. As we get to the end of the meeting, could we ask Beryl, please, to read the promises?
Promises?
The AA promises.
Yes, got the AA promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Excuse me. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialise if we work for them. This is on page 83, 84 of the Big Book.
Thank you, Beryl.
Thanks, Beryl.
And thank you, Beryl and Joe and Peter and Graham, for sharing and being part of this Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air, which is on every fourth Saturday on Wellington Access Radio. And so the next one will be in 4 weeks from today, 10:15 a.m. Now, we close AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer. And so we shall close this meeting with that. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clive.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
And we'll see you in a month. Sorry, 4 weeks from now.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.